The Spectator magazine is home to wonderful writing, insightful analysis, and unrivaled books and arts reviews. Subscribe today for just £12 and receive a 12-week subscription in print and online, along with a free £20 John Lewis or Waitrose voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher. Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by Isabel Hardman and James Hill. So yesterday on the podcast, we talked about the growing cause for Rishi Sunak to ban arms sales to Israel in the aftermath of the death of three British aid workers. James, now that we're on maybe day three of the story now, have the cause quietened down or what are the latest developments?
It's very much the opposite, actually. And it's just like what we saw with calls for a ceasefire at the beginning of this year, which is that, you know, initially a position adopted by the SNP, which was to stop the UK government granting licences for British companies to export arms to Israel. That position has now been picked up yesterday by the Liberal Democrats. It's also espoused by the Greens as well. And now this morning, what we've seen is Sadiq Khan come out and call for an immediate halting of those licences being granted. And what's now striking is that there's a few Conservatives coming out as well. Last night was Flick Drummond, and I think it's noticeable that perhaps at this stage it is mostly Conservatives outside Parliament, or outside the Commons, than inside it. So people like Nick Soames, Alan Duncan, notably pro-Arabist Tories. But then, strikingly this afternoon, Mark Logan, who's a government PPS, is one of those. So I think that this is a recognition of the fact that a lot of, I would imagine, liberal opinion in Britain has been pretty horrified by what's happened. And abroad as well, obviously, Rishi Sunak has come out and been very critical of what happened in the Israeli strike on Monday. But of course, the other nations affected, there was a Pole killed, there was a US-Canadian citizen killed, an Australian too. And so it's therefore no surprise that those leaders have all come out. And so in terms of the international dimension of this, there's increasingly low international patience with Israel. And in terms of Westminster, the pressure is on the government. I mean, it's Easter recess, but on the government to release their advice on whether Israel is committing crimes against international law, breaches of international law. And if they are, then to therefore suspend those sales. So that's going to be the next big debate. And it was noticeable, I think, that David Cameron, for instance, the Foreign Secretary, gave an interview to the BBC this week. And I pointed to the BBC, he declined to answer questions about Israel as a condition of the interview. So I think that perhaps shows of, you know, it's really, just like the ceasefire calls were, this is going to be a big issue over the next few weeks.
And as well, it doesn't take much for the Conservative Party to argue with itself at the moment. How seriously do you think Rishi Sunak should take these backbench demands? I mean, not least because he personally seems pretty outraged at what Netanyahu's government has done this week.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's quite difficult not to be appalled by what happened, even if you accept the line from Netanyahu that this was an unintended attack. I thought it was striking that Sunak was using much tougher language in terms of enforcing what Netanyahu has promised, which is an investigation. The Prime Minister was saying that it has to be a transparent investigation, as if to say that he's not really fully backing Netanyahu's response to what the Israeli Prime Minister is saying is a mistake. And if you look back over the months following October the 7th, obviously the initial response, not just from the Tories, but from Labour as well, was we are backing Israel wholesale. And that was necessary at the time, but the language has very much shifted to, we think too many people have died, we need to get more aid through, we are raising this incident, that incident with Netanyahu and his government to ensure that, you know, Israel is complying with international humanitarian law. What hasn't changed yet is that Rishi Sunak will always say that we are continuing to urge Israel to comply with international humanitarian law. He will not say Israel is breaking international humanitarian law. And whenever he's asked if he thinks Israel has, he dodges the question with a formulation of the sort of, you know, we're always urging them to do so. And this shift that we've already had has upset a lot of pro-Israel Tories who have been very worried that their government is no longer foursquare behind Israel's right to defend herself, because, you know, the stated objective of Israel's response to the October the 7th attack was to eliminate Hamas. And that was never going to be an easy thing to do, given the way Hamas embed themselves within civilian institutions, areas, and so on, and given the way in which Hamas are very happy to cause the starvation of their own people and allow their people to be cut off and attacked in hospitals and so on. This was never going to be a simple operation. So you have these pro-Israeli conservatives who are saying, well, look, we knew what this was going to entail. So why are you running scared and looking at things through a different lens to fatalities in other conflicts, where they would say that Israeli targeting is much more precise than, for instance, UK airstrikes when we were fighting IS in Syria and Iraq, for instance. And I think it's really interesting in terms of the dynamics that you've then got opening up within the Conservative Party, where you say you've got MPs who are saying we need to suspend arms sales. You've got David Cameron and Andrew Mitchell, who I think are very similar on their foreign policy, not least because I think Cameron gets a lot of his foreign policy from Mitchell, who are not robustly behind Israel. Lots of people would say that's absolutely right. But then you have a group of pro-Israel Conservative MPs who are starting to see this as a bit of an acid test. And I thought it was really interesting that Lord Frost, David Frost, used his Telegraph column that was published today to argue that the government should be backing Israel to destroy Hamas. And if you could go back over, I mean, there have been so many ridiculous Tory rows and sackings over the past few years that many of our listeners will have forgotten the time that Priti Patel went to the Golan Heights, apparently on holiday, which was an unusual holiday destination. And then the whole of the lobby was tracking her return on a plane so that the Prime Minister could sack her. And I think that sort of robust pro-Israel position may start to be something that conservatives of a certain persuasion look for as a test of whether somebody is their kind of Tory over the next few months, particularly as we head into an election. Now, that's obviously about internal conservative politics, but I think it's a reflection of an anxiety amongst the very pro-Israel grouping within the Conservative Party that their government is abandoning the people of Israel who should have this unequivocal right to defend themselves.
And I think it's worth saying as well, on the international law front today, more than 600 lawyers, legal academics and retired senior judges have also signed a petition saying to the Prime Minister, saying that they believe Israel has infringed international law. And it's people like Jonathan Sumption, who are not necessarily considered to be snowflakes. But James, elsewhere, you know, Rishi Sunak has been busy still, even though it's recess, because he has been talking to The Sun's Harry Cole on quite a wide-ranging interview. And this is the line that really stood out to a lot of people.
Do you countenance leaving the ECHR to get Rwanda going?
Look, on this, I've been very clear. You know, I believe that our scheme, including the Rwanda part of it, all our plans to tackle illegal migration, let me just answer the question, Harry. I believe that our plans are compliant with all our international obligations, including the ECHR. But, right, I believe that border security and controlling illegal migration is more important than our membership of any foreign court.
So you could countenance putting in the next Tory manifesto a pledge to leave the ECHR?
Well, I said, I believe that our plans are compliant with all our international obligations, including the ECHR, but I do believe that border security and making sure that we can control illegal migration is more important than membership of a foreign court, because it's fundamental to our sovereignty as a country.
James, what do you read from that?
So he did go further, Rishi Sunak, in suggesting, flirting with the idea of Britain's membership of the European Court of Human Rights being up for debate. And I know that there's been an ongoing debate for most of Rishi Sunak's premiership, both within the Parliamentary Conservative Party and also within Downing Street, about whether you should have some kind of pledge in the manifesto to pull Britain out of the ECHR. I think the thinking for this is threefold. Well, first reason would be that it would be a good clear dividing line, some clear blue water with the Labour Party, who obviously would never go anything like this. I believe actually Keir Starmer, at the time he was a lawyer 20 years ago when this act was being implemented, the Human Rights Act, actually was very much one of those pushing this and was writing leaflets, etc., to try and get public support for the Human Rights Act. So it's clearly something that Labour would never embrace. So clear blue water, the first thing. The second is to try and kind of recreate some of that 2019 get Brexit done sentiment when you had Boris Johnson standing up to the establishment, supposedly, and pushing through an agenda that was supported on the side of people who felt that their voice wasn't being listened to. And I think the third of all is just seen as the only way that he properly gets migration and taking those concerns seriously. The argument against that, of course, is the big elephant in the room, which is that if you have you debate pulling out the European Court of Human Rights, well, of course, that's written into the Good Friday Agreement. And, you know, this government was elected in 2019 on a pledge to get Brexit done. Do we really want to reopen those debates about Europe, negotiating with Europe, given that, you know, the court is written into the UK and EU trade deal? So that's the kind of big argument against it. A cynic perhaps would say, you know, you can put it in the manifesto, fully aware that the polls point to a likely defeat and actually not have to realise it. But I think that it is one of those things under active consideration. I mean, what was so striking as well, the other thing from that interview was that he said Rishi Sunak claims not to have made up his mind when the election is as well, and doesn't know when it's going to be. Well, I think that's the kind of key thing. I think ideally for them, if they're going to have a later election towards sort of November time, they would hope to have the flights off the ground before that. So I think that, you know, this isn't something that Downing Street are turning to as first resort. It's something that some in Downing Street would like them to do, which is to make ECHR membership a political issue in terms of the election. But for now, I think they're focusing on getting the reminder bill up and running. But he's holding open as a potential, he's flirting with the idea, not saying he'd do it completely.
Isabel, do you buy it? Do you buy the chat up line, as it were? Or do you think he's just kind of, you know, grasping at straws now?
I think that question about buying the chat up line is funny, but also really important, because I think one of the problems that Sunak has, and we've discussed this on the podcast before, is whether voters actually believe what he's saying anymore. And it's not just him, you know, it's the Conservatives more widely. That's why you've got Labour saying that it will make levelling up work. Now, that's, I think, partly because Labour is still struggling in lots of ways to come up with its own ideas, and it's kind of riff over the past few years has been, we would do this thing better, as opposed to we would do this completely different thing. But it's also because the thing, in this instance, levelling up or immigration policy or, you know, whatever, really, has been promised and hasn't happened in lots of areas. And so you can understand why some of these things that were very appealing, well marketed by Boris Johnson in particular, but then not realised for, you know, many reasons, why actually just saying, look, we can deliver what has been promised is really appealing, and is then really difficult for, going back to Rishi Sunak, for him, because why would you think that he's going to do what he says he's going to do next if he hasn't, or his party hasn't, done what it's said it's going to do over the past, you know, 14 years?
And finally, James, how did you spend your Wednesday evening?
I spent it in the company of 350 of Nigel Farage's nearest and dearest friends slash contacts slash people from every walk of life.
Don't do yourself down, James.
Where there was, I mean, it was quite an enjoyable evening at Boysdale in Canary Wharf. And among the guest list, I mean, eclectic would be the word I'd use, you heard the likes of Liz Truss rubbing shoulders with Holly Valance. And down the line, a video message from Donald Trump, from which we can hear a bit now.
You look great, Nigel. I tell you, I was just with you and you look great. You've truly been a pivotal voice all over the world, in the United Kingdom and beyond, and everybody's lucky to have you. You're a real champion, and you've championed the cause of defending freedom, reclaiming sovereignty, protecting our borders, and standing up to the corruption of the globalists who want to destroy your country and our country. Already you've earned your place in history, and you really are, you're a historic figure as a prophetic leader, and I know that the people of the UK are grateful for your patriotism and service. In fact, I look very much forward to watching what your next move is going to be, Nigel. It's going to be an interesting one. But you're not done yet, and hopefully the best is yet to come. So, Nigel, enjoy this day, and congratulations on a truly remarkable 60 years on Earth. Your achievements have been incredible. Happy birthday.
Of course, it wouldn't be a Farage encounter without him flirting with the idea of a comeback. But he said on that night he just wants to enjoy his birthday, but he'll be making his plans clear in the coming weeks.
So it didn't feel like a leadership launch?
I think it was probably too disorganised for that.
James and Isabel, thanks very much. And thank you very much for listening at home. If you enjoyed this podcast, do give us a rating and a review. And why not tell a friend about it too?